All right, we're good. Okay, so last week, you guys will recall, excuse me, we began a new sermon series for this semester. In many ways, the pandemic has irrevocably altered the course of human history, right? The exact details of which we may never know until we are long dead and gone. But what we do see happening right now, is scientists and doctors still scrambling to understand the full length and scope of this mephitic virus, economists anxiously harrowing over their inability to project the health of future markets while worrying over its long-term impacts on what were already precarious and volatile economies. By way of threats and accusatory slander, politicians still continuing to butt heads on how best to approach this public health crisis in the forms of domestic and international policies, and as people's emotional and mental health now quickly take a turn for the worst, the psychiatric community, along with other mental health attendants, now growing increasingly alarmed by what they see. Yet, no matter how loudly they may be disagreeing with one another, in this current moment, right, it's become clear that one of the primary things that certainly is binding together all of these so-called experts is just how much they don't know. And through such compounding ignorance, what many of us have gradually come to realize is that we have indeed now entered into a whole new ballgame. That is, we have entered into a foreign an uncharted world, and that beyond this virus, beyond the virus itself, we are now presented with other dangers and challenges, many of which we cannot see, hear, taste, smell, or touch. Thus, like the rest of the world, whether we realize it or not, whether we like it or not, each and every single one of us has been put into this involuntary position of having to navigate a world which we know very little about, a world where one slight move in whichever direction could quite literally mean the difference between life and death. And this is why, friends, this is why we are launching into this new series, because as disciples, we have to carefully answer the fundamental question of what it means to wayfare, what it means to wayfare within this present reality, but to do so in the way that God is calling us to, right? In other words, to walk in the unchanging certainty of Christ in the midst of all the perilous uncertainties of this present world. That's what this series is about. To walk in the unchanging certainty of Christ in the midst of all the perilous uncertainties of this present world. And so tonight, we're going to start by looking at Psalm chapter 32, verse 8, which is also this semester's theme verse. Now, in addition to this verse being our anchor of sorts, it's actually quite a fitting place for us to begin. Because if we are going to navigate this uncharted course rightly, then we need a guide, right? We need a guide. Specifically, a guide who not only knows what he is doing, but just as important, a guide who is unfailing in his intent on seeing us through to the end. By way of the psalmist David, tonight we hear God speak. We see God revealing to us that he is this guide. But not only that, a guide who we can fully and wholeheartedly trust, precisely because he is using everything from the biggest of things to the most microscopic of things. He is using everything that is happening in this world right now for the sake of his glory and for the good of those who love him. But to see exactly what that entails and why that is so crucial for us right now, an excavation concerning the deeper layers of this passage is required. And so as we set out here, right, as we set out here, I'd like for us to look at how God is guiding us through these times by now turning our attention to these three main points, okay? These three main points. First, God guides by instructing you with his truth. Second, God guides by empowering you with his presence. And then third, God guides by hiding from you his future. So, to the first point. Now, it's not so hard for us to admit, right, that for almost anything in life, whatever it may be, whether you're going on a trail, learning a new instrument, learning a new subject, almost anything in life, we understand that we are in need of a guide, right? Presumably a guide being someone who has charted the course, has successfully gone through its various obstacles, and has acquired the skills and high levels of competency to help others do the same. Like in that scene from the 7th episode of Star Wars. I'm about to geek out here, so bear with me. The 7th episode of Star Wars, The Force Awakens, when Kylo Ren and Rey are dueling it out with their lightsabers. And then in the middle of their duel, Kylo Ren perceives that the novice warrior, Rey, although deeply gifted with the Force, has still yet to tap into her full potential as a Jedi. And so, attempting to sway her towards the dark side, Kylo Ren says to her, what? Have you guys seen this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. What does he say?
I just know I don't like Kylo Ren. Yeah, he's
what does he say? Right? This is going to be my terrible Kylo Ren impression. You need a... Actually, I'm not going to do it. Wait, should I do it? Yeah, I'll do it. Right? You need a teacher. I can show you the ways of the Force. Right?
That was really bad.
Yeah. For those of you online, Daniel said that was a really bad impression. Okay. but, right, that's what he says. You need a teacher. I can show you the ways of the Force. Or, if you're more of a Marvel fan, then there's that excellent scene from that Doctor Strange movie. So, for those of you who haven't seen it, let me just kind of give us some context, right? Dr. Stephen Strange, a famous yet cocky neurosurgeon, he gets into this devastating car accident, leaving him with severe injuries in his hands, right? And fearing that his medical profession is now over, he spares no expense in getting the best medical attention and treatment possible in order to help him heal. But despite the numerous amounts of surgical and therapeutic procedures, nothing seems to do the trick. And so, being disillusioned by Western medicine, Dr. Strange goes looking for alternative methods of healing that then puts him in the direct path of Jesus. No, I'm just kidding. Not Jesus. Of the ancient... Yeah, Matt's like, I don't think that's right. Of the ancient one, right? That puts him in the direct path of the ancient one, otherwise known as the Sorcerer Supreme, master of the mystic arts, right? Upon their initial encounter, the Ancient One tells Dr. Strange that there is indeed a reality. There's a reality that exists beyond this natural one, but which he has not yet seen. Yet adamant in his disbelief, he antagonistically responds, and this is one of my favorite lines from the entire movie, right? I do not believe in fairy tales about chakras or energy or the power of belief. There is no such thing as spirit. We are made of matter and nothing more. And then, intensifying his gaze as he looks deeper into the eyes of the Ancient One, he says, "You're just another tiny, momentary speck within an indifferent universe." Right? I love that. And so, seeing that she can't just tell him about it, the Ancient One goes one step further. She shows him. She shows him by removing his spirit from his body And then by taking him through this really trippy ride through all the various mystical and astral realms. And then, right, after he goes through all these astral realms and planes, he crash lands back into his body. And then what does the now humbled Doctor Strange do? He slowly picks himself up, gets on his knees, and he begs the Ancient One, teach me. Teach me. Or guide me, right? Now, I bring up these somewhat contrasting examples, not only to point us to what many of us already know, namely that we need a guide, but more principally, that the sort of guide or guides we choose to follow is just as significant. Therefore, the question is not so much, right, for us, do I need a guide? But rather, the question facing many of us right now is, which guide? Which guide? You see, the reality is that depending on which guide you choose to follow, you are either moving towards life or you are drawing away from it. Of course, right, there are many people today who sell themselves as being such life-giving guides. And for a variety of reasons, we jump at the opportunity of being their disciples. We may follow them because of their eloquence and their charisma. We may follow them because of the allure of their political philosophies, the number of followers they have online, perhaps their beauty or sex appeal, the passionate zeal they seem to have for social justice causes, their outlandish net worths, or even because they give voice to the hate we have towards our enemies. But at the very center, right, at the very center of all these things, we notice that no matter how hard we may try, we cannot avoid that ringing question in our ears: is any of this actually based on truth? Not good feelings, not money, cars, whatever. Is any of this actually based on truth? Now, why might truth matter when it comes to the guides we choose to follow during this time, particularly, especially during this time? Well, as I've already mentioned, right? It's because it will either move you towards life or it will pull you away from it. So, with these things that I've just said, putting two and two together, if you do the math, right, what does this mean? It means that truth is inseparable from life and that life is inseparable from truth. The great lie of our modern culture, and I pray for you often, because it is so much harder for you than when I was growing up, and I'm sure Teacher Natalie and Teacher Kitty would say the same. The great lie of our modern culture is that you can have a meaningful life apart from what is actually true. Don't worry about what's true, just have a meaningful life, as if you could separate the two. Precisely because, right, why? Precisely because one of the defining markers of post-modernity, and post-modernity being a fancy term for the historical period we're all right now living in, right? It's because one of the defining markers of post-modernity is its rejection of the possibility of what we call objective truth. And again, this is why we now hear people saying things like, just be true to yourself, right? You do you. Or why nowadays the kinds of students that are being pumped out by the public education system are students who care more about winning debates and arguments rather than being diligent seekers of the truth. But it makes sense. If there is no objective truth, if that is the underlying cultural presumption, that there is no objective truth, then there is only the subjective truth you create. So going back to the question now, right? Is any of this based on truth? Or are you actually being guided by the truth? Now, as I've just put that in front of you once again, I'm sure many of us have already jumped the gun and in our heads have answered, yes. But here's the thing. How could you possibly answer that question with any modicum of certainty if you agree with the rest of culture that there is no such thing as truth? You see how self-defeating it is? So if you're one of those people that prematurely answered the question, right, before you answer that question, and not just you, but all of us, you need to answer this question. We need to answer this question first. Do you even know what truth is? Or to put it in clearer terms, do you know Jesus? Do you know Jesus, and do you actually have a personal relationship of ongoing obedience with him? Again, I want to make that clear. Not knowing things about Jesus, not knowing facts and interesting biblical data, but do you know him in a personal and intimate way that causes you to obey and follow him and take up your cross day by day? That sort of knowledge, that sort of relationship. Do you know him? You see, in John chapter 18, while being questioned by Pontius Pilate, just moments before his crucifixion, right? Jesus is asked if he is what? If he is a king. And Jesus responds, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world." Which purpose? "To bear witness to the truth. For everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Then immediately after, Pilate asks another question. And this question that he asks, many biblical scholars applaud him for. Why? Because it is the most important question that there is. What is truth? Of course, right where the praise begins, the disappointment begins, since it seems like Pontius Pilate, right? It seems like he had just given up too quickly on seeking out the answer. If it's the most important question there is, then surely the answer to come out of it is the most important answer we could have. The answer upon which, quite literally, your cells run. The answer to which, quite literally, the world and the universe are hinged. Good question. But why didn't you follow through, Pilate? But regardless of the exact reason, John the Gospel writer is showing us, right, that the question actually had already been answered. The answer, in fact, stood right in front of his face. What is truth? He was looking right at it, and he missed it. Youth group, who is worthy enough to guide us? In other words, who is truthful enough to bring us to where we need to go? It's him. It's him. In verse 8 of our passage, at the beginning of verse 8, God says, right, "I will instruct you and I will teach you in the way you should go." Now, if you blinked, you might have missed it. God says he will teach us. He will teach us in what? In the way you should go. Or in the way we ought to go, if that helps. In other words, the text is telling us that God is the God who leads his people according to truth, which is given to us in the person of Jesus Christ, as we've seen from John's example. Right? Have you ever noticed, friends? Have you ever noticed when people say you should do something? And I'm not just talking about like, oh, you should take out the trash. I'm talking about like more of the weightier matters. Have you ever noticed that when people say you should do something, that what they're doing is they're tacitly making a truth claim? They're suggesting that among all the other options, that this is better or the best, right? Or at least it gets more closer to being correct than the others. But when it comes to God, it's different. Why? Because the fullness of truth is actually found in him. Thus, when God says to us that this is the way in which we ought to go, you should not hear that. We should not read that as God merely giving us a better suggestion or just a different outlook or a different perspective, but rather we should hear that as God giving us himself. God is giving you himself. When we look out on the world right now, right, we see all sorts of guides. They are aplenty. And we see all sorts of followers, present company not excluded. But in Matthew 15:14, what does Jesus call them? And you guys, for many of you, this should be fresh in your minds because we just went over this. He calls them blind. They are blind guides because they do not walk according to truth. It's the blind leading the blind. Which is why sooner or later, Jesus says, right, both the blind guides and the blind followers, let them alone, because they'll eventually self-destruct. They'll self-destruct, don't worry. It's the blind leading the blind. But to us, and to everyone who is willing to hear his voice, Jesus says, look to me. Look to me, listen for my voice, and walk in the path of my instructions. I will guide you to where you need to go. And how can you be sure of this? John 14:6, because I am the truth. And because I am the truth, as we said, you will know what it means to live. It doesn't matter if it's a pandemic or a famine, loneliness or despair, times of war or mass rioting and chaos. In every trial, Jesus says, I will guide you so long as you hear and obey my voice. Friends, whatever is going on in your life right now, whatever is going on in your life right now, however you feel affected by this pandemic, and as I've alluded to during worship, And this is something that I actually talked a bit about with Teacher Natalie this past week, how this has been messing me up in so many ways. So however you feel affected, right, instead of looking to the cheap comforts and the misleading philosophies of blind guides of Fox News and the New York Times and whatever else you glue yourself to, look to the truth of Christ and follow him. Because in him there is life. Now this leads me to the second point. In the latter half of this passage then, we find the psalmist now continuing to expand our vision of God as the guide of his people when he goes on to say, I will counsel you with my eye upon you. Indeed, the best guides or the best teachers, right, are usually the ones who not only provide you with instruction, but they are the ones who help you to do what you cannot do on your own. Can you imagine? Well, I mean, it would be equivalent to, yeah, your math teacher just giving you the textbook and say, there, figure it out, right? Not a good teacher. The best ones help you to do what you cannot do on your own. You see, more often than not, the problem for us, though, is not so much not knowing what to do, but it's lacking the strength of will to go and actually do it. The vast majority of us in here know what we should do. You just lack the strength of will to actually do it. And these days, I feel like the wearier we become, the more tempting it is for us to run on the fumes of cheap grace. We want faith that makes us feel better, but in our weariness, it's difficult for us to accept a faith that requires us to lay down our lives for others and actually do the work of discipleship. But related to this, right, there are other ways this temptation rears its ugly head. For instance, in 2005, the sociologist of religion, Christian Smith, who's now teaching at Notre Dame, and Melinda Lundquist Denton, who's teaching at UT San Antonio, they released a book titled Soul Searching: The Religious and Spiritual Lives of American Teenagers. And in this book, they present the findings of an interesting study where they interviewed about 3,000 American teenagers, during which they asked various questions about their views on God, spirituality, and religion. And once the interviews were over, they compiled and reviewed the student responses, and what they found was that every single response had these five things or these five characteristics in common. American teens typically tend to believe, first, God created the world and watches over human life. Second, God wants people to be good. Third, the main goal in life is to be happy and feel good about oneself. Four, God is only there to solve my problems. And five, good people go to heaven when they die. And for this system of heretical beliefs, these sociologists, they famously termed it as moralistic therapeutic deism. Moralistic therapeutic deism. It's a famous term in academic circles. Everyone knows what this means now. Moralistic therapeutic deism, or MTD for short, right? Now, I don't think the majority of us in here hold to moralistic therapeutic deism, these beliefs. Hopefully not. I hope I trained you guys better than that. Yet, despite not holding to these beliefs, what I have observed is that many of us function or live day-to-day life as moralistic therapeutic deists. Particularly in the sense that, right, we live as if God is somewhere off there. He's out there, off in space, hanging out, but nowhere actually near us. He's not here. He's not around us. He's not there with the orphans, the widows, the immigrants, the poor, the brokenhearted. He's just somewhere out there. All right, you are functional, moralistic, therapeutic deists. Moreover, in other ways, we see this in our personal lives, right? We often read our Bibles without any sort of expectation to actually hear God speak. We may do it, right, simply because Pastor David said we should, but seldom because we expect to hear the Word of God giving us the guidance, the fresh guidance we need for each new day. But insofar as this is us, no wonder we lack strength to do God's will. It's because we so often forget that God's speaking to us, and this is so important. And if you're writing, this is something worth writing. It's because we so often forget that God speaking to us is one and the same thing as God manifesting his presence within us. How do I know when God is here, when God speaks? And how do I know when it is truly God speaking, when he shows up? You see, God does not merely provide you with counsel, the psalmist writes, but he does so always with his eye upon you. Through the counsel of God, we experience the presence of God. You see that? Through the counsel of God, we experience the presence of God. But that presence is only felt when we receive God's counsel in faith. Not as Christians of cheap grace, nor as moralistic therapeutic deists, but as disciples of Christ who, along with the prophet Isaiah, continually open ourselves up to the Lord and say to him every morning, "Here I am, Lord. Here I am, God. Send me." The Christian couple and songwriters, Cody Carnes and Carrie Job, right? They wrote that amazing song, "The Blessing." And we sung this, right? We sung this past summer at Jejun. And in that song, there's that line which I think beautifully and powerfully depicts for us what the presence of God showing up looks like in the moments when we receive the counsel of his guidance through faith. And so let me just read off these lyrics to you, right? His presence goes before you and behind you and beside you, all around you, and within you. He is with you. He is with you. In the morning, in the evening, in your coming and your going, in your weeping and your rejoicing, he is for you. He is for you. You see, youth group, God already knows you lack the strength and the will of heart to follow his guidance. He already knows that. And that's why God doesn't just tell you what to do, but through the grace of his presence, he pours into you his spirit to empower you to do what you cannot do on your own. And as Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 2:10, this is the very same Spirit who has searched from eternity and continues to search unto eternity the innermost parts of the infinite triune God. And how incredible is it? How incredible is it that this same Spirit is now given to you? He is given to you through faith and through baptism. Why? Right? So that you not only can discern what the will of God is, what truth is, but also can carry it out within this hurting and broken world. But lastly, for this point, how can we have assurance that the Spirit will actually do this for us? And the answer is simple. It's because of Christ. And this is why the gospel is good news. For Jesus entered into a world just as uncharted as ours, and yet Jesus still did not cave to the will of men, nor sell himself out to the philosophies of blind guides, right? You know what a sellout is? He didn't sell himself out to the philosophies of blind guides, but instead he walked according to the truth of God's Spirit as he sought to do the Father's will day by day, moment by moment, minute by minute, second by second. And in this way, Jesus lived. In this way, he lived the life you should have lived. And because we didn't, right, he died the death we should have died a million times over. But still, he rose again. So you too could know and live in the truth and thereby never be without a guide. All right, I'm almost done here. Now I'm the third point. How are you guys doing? You guys doing okay? Yeah, I see some of you guys starting to doze off a little.
Can you go over the points,
please? I'll go over them at the end. Can you wait? Thanks, Vivian. All right, so to the third point now, and this will be shorter. So to be clear, okay? After having gone through these things, I just want to be clear now for this last point. All right, following God's guidance, it doesn't mean he will make every part of his plan known to us. And it certainly doesn't mean we will always know where he is leading us. Much in the same way, Jesus never told his disciples what the future held for him, right? The only thing Jesus said to them, which he is saying to each and every one of us right now, was that, what? You should take up your cross and follow me. Now, if you're wondering why God doesn't just tell you beforehand where he is leading you, or why he doesn't do that for the disciples, I tend to think of it this way, right? Could you imagine how differently the disciples would have responded if, right, to Jesus, that is, if he had made the fullness of his plans known to them? They would have responded much differently, right? They would never have gone to where Jesus was leading them. Certainly, if Jesus told them that his plan was to be crucified, right? I'm going to be crucified, and then you're going to live for me, and you're going to pretty much die the same deaths, right? Similar deaths. If that's what they heard, and he revealed all of that to them, no doubt in my mind, they would have ditched him right on the spot. And some of you guys are thinking, well, they might have lived a little longer, right? Sorry, slightly getting into my Edward voice, right? Well, they might have lived a little longer, right? But at what cost? For what? Yeah, if they ditched him, they might have lived a little longer, but at what cost? And the cost is this, the cost of never knowing the joy that comes from being in the presence of God. That's the cost. I gave my life to Christ. I mean, I grew up in a Christian home, but I really gave my life to him, you know, early high school. But for many reasons, but for very similar reasons and bad reasons that many of you guys are still not getting baptized, I held off my baptism for so long. But nonetheless, I gave my life to Christ early in high school, genuinely, to follow him, to actually commit myself to him. Now, at that time, I still had my plans to go into medicine, to go to a secular school, to get away from my parents, and to actually live it up, and so on and so forth. And had God shown me where he was leading me, had God shown me what my life would have been, I would have said, forget that. But at what cost? You see, right now, I hope this is making sense. You see, right now, we don't possess the ability to comprehend, right, that where God is leading us is always good. You don't have the ability to comprehend that. If God showed me all of this when I was in high school, I could never believe that he was good, right? Thus, what God hides from us, he does so that as we follow him, right, we would grow in our faith. And then along the way, become the sort of disciples which we currently are not yet, to then one day receive, right, everything he has made for us, or excuse me, everything that he has for us with the faith that it requires. It was getting here to this point in my life, and all that God has done in my life, that once I arrived, I've seen, this is so good. I have no doubt in my mind that had Jesus revealed the future to Peter, the fisherman, he never would have gone to where Christ was leading him. But notice that it's by following Jesus and trusting in his love and in his guidance that at the end of his life, Peter, the disciple, receives his future with joy. Indeed, though it's not always clear to us, youth group, as to how we will get there, and though it's not always clear as to what shape it will take, the promise of the gospel is that God is guiding us towards a future with him. Therefore, we can trust him in this life. Why? Because the future we'll have with him is actually a future you possess right now because of Jesus. As our lives are joined to his. So to wrap this all up now, and Vivian, right, to sum up these points. How is God guiding us through these times? God guides us in truth by empowering us to go where we otherwise might not go, and by transforming us along the way so that when that day comes, namely that day when God will reveal all things to his people, we will stand ready to receive it in joy and have the ability to say, ah, so that's what you are up to. Praise be to God. Amen.